Good afternoon. It is 19 minutes after 5 o'clock. Today is Wednesday, September 25th, 2013. I'm Ed Ronco with Raven News. The price of electricity in Sitka is going up. All customers of the city-owned utility will see a 10% rate increase beginning July 1st. The Sitka Assembly gave final approval to the rate hike at its regular meeting last night. It's designed to help pay for the expansion of the Blue Lake Dam. The city has borrowed tens of millions of dollars for the project, which is estimated to cost about $140 million. The Assembly also moved some money in a separate measure to the Sitka Convention and Visitors Bureau. The CVB gets 92% of the bed tax collected in Sitka. It's a tax imposed on lodging. The city collected more of it than expected, so the amount of money the CVB initially received ended up being less than 92% of the total. The Assembly voted to send nearly $46,000 to the Visitors Bureau to make up the difference. Lastly, in yet another measure, the Assembly also set aside $7,500 to regrade the parking lot at the Hames Center on the Sitka Fine Arts campus. That is enough money to cover half of the work. The other half will be paid for by Alaska Arts Southeast, which owns the property. The gravel lot is getting a makeover to accommodate hundreds of people expected to attend the Alaska Travel Industry Association conference. That's taking place next month. Many of the events are happening at Hames and on campus. The Baranof Island Housing Authority can go ahead with its plan to nearly double the size of a quarry it owns in Sitka. The Assembly last night gave approval to a 20-year permit that would allow the public housing organization to expand the rock pit. It would go from 18.8 acres to about 36. But residents who live nearby say they're worried about safety and peace in their neighborhood. The issue isn't so much with the quarry itself as it is with the traffic that it might generate. Bo Hedrick lives near the gate where semi-trucks access the gravel road leading to the quarry.
I purchased the home just over a year ago with the understanding that they were going to be continuing to move rock out of there, but just for another month or two, and then they were going to be shutting it down.
Those 2 months, he said, were stressful. Traffic to the quarry comes in and out on Yaw Drive, a residential street. Hedrick's house is actually on the corner of a side street just uphill from Yaw, and that worries him as the parent of two kids, ages 4 and 7.
So anytime they drop the basketball, let go of anything, it rolls immediately right down and through Yaw Drive and right into the ditch on the other side. Semis coming down there, we're averaging probably 30, 40 miles an hour when they come down. They're coming down from the gravel road, and there's no stop sign, there's no yield, there's no hey, slow down. They're flying, they're coming out.
BIHA doesn't have concrete plans for the quarry yet, except that it knows it wants access to more rock. Work itself could be sporadic and on a project-by-project basis. Crews will move material as needed, but not necessarily all the time. BIHA's development coordinator says the organization is not planning on becoming a big rock supplier.
We're not really in the rock business. We're in the housing business. And so,
Cliff Richter.
So the primary purpose of the request is how could we reclaim the site and turn it into something that would be more feasibly developed for residential use in the future. So we're looking, you know, not 2 years, 3 years out, but 10, 5, 10, 20 years out from now.
Assembly members had their own concerns. Phyllis Hackett wanted to know why there wasn't more public comment. She worried that the alphabet soup of government regulations and code is not always understandable to the general public.
I get mailings, you know, of things that are happening that I should be aware of, and really myself, and I'm fairly well informed, I would say 80% of the time, maybe 75%, I don't know what it's talking about.
Hackett has had that worry before, and planner Megan Bozak said it's been taken seriously. The planning department now writes paragraphs on the back of public notices it mails to neighbors, attempting to explain the government ease on the front. That happens for every issue now. And for this case in particular, Bozak said the planning department tried to get more public comment.
We went ahead and extended the public process to 3 public hearings for both issues and then a 4th public hearing for the conditional use permit, going over all the conditions and the findings.
The assembly added a couple conditions to the permit, including the installation of a stop sign and a speed limit of 20 miles an hour for trucks along Yaw Drive.
Speeding of heavy equipment in Sitka is a plague.
Interim Municipal Administrator Jay Sweeney.
And the only way you can control that is by, as either as Mr. Harmon said, by law enforcement or having such a penalty that it stings hard enough to really cause the folks to not speed. Which is, you get caught speeding, your quarry gets shut down.
That's an example, not a recommendation there. The assembly agreed that tougher penalties would work, but rewriting the law to make room for them will take some time. Neighbors, meanwhile, like Bo Hedrick, still have concerns. He wanted to know, if there are no foreseen projects for the quarry to ship rock, why does work have to happen 6 days a week, as the permit allows? Why does work have to start at 7 a.m. when kids are still boarding school buses along the road? And finally, why do the rock trucks need to come through the neighborhood in the first place? After all, Hedrick said they're going to have a lot of rock to work with, so...
If they could build their own road, it would be outstanding. If there's an area where they could actually go and come out where they've got their new complex with all that, that would kind of cut off all of the housing, everything. So if the trucks could actually come out in that area... and go up in that area and completely not even go into the residential area would be ideal.
Richter from BIHA and Bozak from the planning department both said that BIHA would be happy to work with neighbors, contractors, and the city to make the situation work for everyone. The assembly approved the changes 6-0. Tor Christensen recused himself because of close friendships with some of the people involved. Alaska has become a nationwide leader in healthy births. In part three of Coast Alaska's ongoing series on healthcare in Southeast, KRBD's Sean Carlson explored how Ketchikan Medical Center plays a part in that trend, even when moms-to-be must travel considerable distances to deliver.
If you go right through that front door there that you came through to the front door across the way, elevator's right to the left.
What?
Go up to the third floor and it's all the way down.
This is the Landing Hotel in Ketchikan. It's flooded with charter fishermen and other tourists this time of year, which makes it one of the town's busier places to stay.
Hey, Kelly.
Hi, yes.
I'm Sean. It's nice to meet you.
Right now, the Landing is hosting a different sort of visitor, and her story is part of a medical trend that has made Alaska the best in the nation in an unlikely area.
My name is Kelly Taylor. I am 24 years old, and I am 37 weeks pregnant today.
Kelly is due to give birth in about 3 weeks. Her previous pregnancy was complicated, so her doctors are taking a few extra precautions. But other than that, she seems pretty normal, with a healthy sense of humor about the sights she's seen in Ketchikan so far.
We've walked around the mall a couple times, the greatest mall in Alaska. There's a Walmart here.
That's what everybody said.
But there is something unconventional about Kelly's situation. She's from Klawak on Prince of Wales Island. That's about 70 miles from Ketchikan. The medical center in Ketchikan is the closest facility equipped to deliver babies. And as a policy, the women's clinic in the city requires pregnant women from rural communities to travel to Ketchikan at least 2 weeks before their due date. So women like Kelly get on a ferry or float plane while very pregnant to the city, and then they wait and wait.
Yeah, I'm definitely bored out of my mind for sure.
But despite Kelly's boredom, her situation represents a radical transformation from what Alaska prenatal care was like 30 years ago. That change, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, is responsible for a dramatic turnaround. Alaska used to have the worst infant and neonatal mortality rates in the nation. Now it has the best. If Alaska was its own country, it would tie Switzerland and give Scandinavia a run for its money. Representatives from Alaska medical advocacy groups say the state's rise to the top is due in large part to advances in how care is provided in often remote locations. Dr. Matt Hirschfeld has been on the front lines of that change at the Native Medical Center in Anchorage.
Beginning in the early 80s, late 70s, people in Alaska realized that there had to be a better way to deliver care to women so that they had a more healthy baby when the baby was born. And so there became a concerted effort between the Alaska Tribal Health System, Providence Hospital, the state of Alaska, to develop a system such that women had healthier babies when they were born.
Medical centers in the state use a mix of midwives and OBGYN doctors to deliver that care. If the woman, such as Kelly, is in a remote town or village, midwives are flown or ferried in every month to conduct regular checkups. Then the medical center requires the woman to travel 2 to 4 weeks before their due date and wait for delivery. Marta Poor has worked as a midwife with the Ketchikan Medical Center for nearly 3 decades and has seen this medical transformation firsthand. In her own words, medical care in some villages back then was akin to that in third world countries.
Because I know one woman, preterm twin pregnancy, I can still remember, they're trying to prepare for a medevac, and she's got her husband out there cutting down trees so they can clear a spot big enough for the helicopter to come in.
Like everything in Southeast, aspects of the system that have developed are uniquely, well, Alaskan. Representatives from the Ketchikan Medical Center say that more than half of those who come from out of town are Alaska Native. At least 75% of the women are on Medicaid. That's good for the patients, as the coverage pays for both their transportation to Ketchikan and much of the cost of their stay. Even so, coming to Ketchikan can be costly. Kelly Taylor's fiancé, who works at a grocery store in Klawak, couldn't afford to take the time off to stay with her. And Kelly, who works in the same store, is obviously also not working while she's in Ketchikan.
It's really expensive to be over here for a month. I'm not working. I had to take time off work to be over here because that's what the doctors recommended me to do. You know, if it were up to me, I'd be at home right now and I'd fly over if my water broke or something.
Kelly's mother is spending the full 3 weeks with her, though, at a cost of at least $200. And although Medicaid covers some food costs, the voucher can only be used in the Landing's restaurant. The boredom and cost can be so great for the women, the midwife Marta Poor says a unique phenomenon develops.
There's a lot of pressure to induce. And especially you got 2 or 3 kids on the other island that you got, you know, somebody in the family watching. But you want those kids. You're here all by yourself. Your husband needs to work as far as logging or timber or whatever, or fishing, whatever he's doing. Then you may find a woman here all by herself and she is depressed. I mean, and then her husband comes in for the weekend, and you want that baby now.
Of course, the doctors and midwives can't ethically do much to help the women deliver early, beyond recommending spicy foods or walking. Kelly's mother, who has delivered 3 babies this way in Ketchikan, understands her daughter's situation. And now that the younger woman is going through it, they both agree.
And if you pretty much talk to anybody that's been through it, it's the worst part about being pregnant. It's coming over to Ketchikan to wait.
Yeah.
Kelly says that if given the option, she'd choose to give birth at home, even though it would be higher risk. Dr. Matt Hirschfeld says he is happy with how prenatal care in the state has progressed, but he admits there's still room for improvement, especially in that almost purgatorial wait period for the women before they give birth.
Oh, there's always room. I mean, the goal is to get this rate to a zero. We have these moms who are, you know, like I said, here in Anchorage or in Bethel or in Ketchikan, who are here for weeks before they deliver. And we really don't do enough with that time. We have a captive audience. We can really have some major effects on their pregnancy if we had a concerted effort towards education.
And he says there may be some lessons for the rest of the United States in Alaska's transformation. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Sean Carlson.
This is Raven Radio, KCAW.